Sairam, dear listeners, and welcome once again to Vahini Satsang. I am Team Radio Sai Bishu, and as always, along with me is Sai Prakash. By Bhagwan's grace, we have, like last week, also Professor Venkatraman with us as we discuss the 13th chapter of Prema Vahini. But before we get on with our program, let me take this opportunity to wish all of you a beautiful, bright and blessed Diwali.
Shraddha ka deepak bhakti ki jyoti, satya prem ki jalti nishani, satya prem ki jalti nishani Deepavali.
Dear listeners, let us light the lamp of Sai love in as many hearts as possible, creating smiles and joy all around. Wishing you a bright, beautiful and exciting Diwali.
So happy Diwali, and this is a festival that is celebrated from Newark to New Delhi to New Zealand in some form or the other. And of course this year the government has banned bursting of crackers in New Delhi. And I guess there will always be beautiful lamps everywhere, even if there are no crackers. Interestingly, that is how Diwali was celebrated traditionally for many centuries. Bursting of crackers began only after 1940. This is what I was reading an article this morning which said that during the Mughal era, Deepavali was celebrated primarily using lamps and a bit of illuminative fireworks, and this was limited to the state of Gujarat. Aurangzeb, the Mughal king, banned the public exhibition of both lamps and fireworks for Diwali in 1667. After the Mughals, for much of the British rule, the Stringent Explosives Act restricted the manufacture and sale of raw materials that were used for creating these fireworks. And in 1940, the Explosive Act was amended, making the manufacture of a certain class of fireworks legal. And two brothers seized this opportunity, and in 1940 they created the first fireworks factory in Shivakasi in South India, and from then on they worked hard to somehow associate Deepavali with fireworks, and their idea sort of caught on because they earlier had a matchbox factory, and so this was sort of a natural extension of their business. So that is how fireworks and all the sound and the explosive sort of pollution that the Delhi government banned it today came into being. In fact, when I was thinking about this festival this morning, the word light came to me in the form of an acronym, and L-I-G-H-T occurred to me as live in gratitude happily today and every day. If we can live in the light of Swami's love and in gratitude for all the light that He continues to shed in our hearts, in our minds, and share that light with all, that would be a beautiful way to observe this festival. Bhagwan, during every festival, used to emphasize on the inner significance of every occasion, of every ritual that is laid down by our sages and saints. And today, as we discuss the third segment of this chapter 13 of Prema Vahini, we will be deliberating on this, because Bhagwan here is referring to this knowledge and wisdom that has been passed on to us by our illustrious ancestors. So that is what we will be touching upon in today's Vahini Satsang, and I'm sure we are all waiting for Professor Venkatraman to share his insights on this topic. So with prayers, let's begin listening to the Vahini Satsang, the Vahini segment. So let's begin with the new signature tune that we have come up for Vahini Satsang, and then we'll move on. Welcome, Professor Venkatraman sir, once again to Vahini Satsang. Before we move on to Vahini Satsang, would you like to share something about Diwali, sir? Any comments, any thoughts on the festival? Since everybody around is only in the Diwali mood today.
Well, I will just mention something that I read a couple of days ago. It's all right, my voice is...
Yes, yes.
Good. There are many traditions associated with Deepavali, as we call it, which is a better name than Diwali.
Yes.
There is going to be a north-south fight now. Anyway, it marks the annihilation of a guy called Narakasura. As Swami said, when Nara, man, becomes Asura, he becomes Narakasura. So, that is really the thing.
Yes.
You are Nara, but the Asuras in you, they have got together. So you have to have a war inside,
yes,
and get rid of the bad guy. Good guy, bad guy fight goes inside.
Inside, yes.
That is really the message of our ancestors.
Correct.
We are talking of all sorts of things. The good versus fight goes on outside, but it's also going inside.
Yes.
And if this is stopped, that stops. So the pollution starts inside and goes outside.
Yeah.
It's the essence of our... the teachings of our ancestors.
Yes.
And last time also you mentioned about how what our ancestors said and so on, so on and so forth.
Yes.
I'll take a pause here to know whether you have some comments on what I said just now. Because I got a letter, a set of points in front of me, which I would like to talk. But you have any comments? I don't want it to become a monologue.
No. I think what you were referring...
No. There used to be an old phrase in cricket. There was a fellow called Vizhi, Maharaj Kumar. And he was a commentator. We can hear in the microphone a lot of people clapping, shouting and all that. This fellow will be talking about his past glory and... that was long ago. There was no... So there was a saying. There was no TV at that time. I like Ike. And Vizhi likes Mike. He was called Vizhi.
They are called the people who love Mike.
President Eisenhower was the president. I like Ike, Vizhi likes Mike.
The people who like Mike apparently are called Mikeasuras.
You can call that. What will you call a fellow with smartphone? Not today. The answer will be given in the next program. You can submit your answers.
Now, when you are mentioning about Narakasura, yes, that's very pertinent, but the one thing which comes to my mind when you talk about Diwali is that scene of Swami standing at the edge of the veranda and looking at the crackers bursting. It was a sight to see. He would stand there, you know, yes, without even blinking. He would just stare into those crackers. Mm-hmm. And once when it was being lit in the mandir, one of the rockets that the students lit, it went and hit some of the ladies there.
Oh,
and they were shouting, Sai Ram, Sai Ram.
Oh,
Swami said, I am here. Why they are getting so perturbed?
Why fear when I am here?
Literally standing there to cover up for all our drawbacks. But that was a wonderful sight. And Swami would often give this small...
All that I saw on today's Thursday Darshan.
Yes, yeah. Yes.
Okay. Wonderful. In fact, so, sir, as you are referring to this... mind pollution. Basically, Swami always mentions that all the pollution outside is because of the mind pollution, and I think that's what also occurs in this third segment of the 13th chapter. So let's please listen to this, and then, sir, you can share your reflections.
Atti pavitra grandhalanu ippati manavaru kondaru gamaninchaka elukalu kotti boozu pattina atti tukkule mana dikkani talanchaka పారవేయుచున్నారు. ఈ తుక్కునే పాశ్చాత్య దేశీయులు పరిశీలించి పరిశోధించి వాటిలోని అద్వితీయ తేజఃపుంజములను బ్రహ్మమణి రాజములని గ్రహించి కన్నులకద్దుకొని శిరమునందుంచుకొని తమ జాతులకు అమూల్య అలంకారముగా చేసుకొని భరతఖండం మాకిచ్చిన విలువనెరగని ఆస్తి ఇది అని సముద్రం దాటిపోవు మహాఘోషముతో పట్టజాలని సంతోషంతో పలుకుచుండగా అట్టి వాటికి అర్హులైన భారతీయ బిడ్డలు ఏమి చేయుచున్నారు చెప్పన? ఆ గ్రంథములేవో వీరు చూచుటేలేదు, వినుటలేదు, తలచుటలేదు. కోటికొక్కడైనా వాటిని చదివిన వానిని మూఢుడని బూతుతిట్లు తిడుతున్నారు. అవి ఒట్టి తప్పుడు తడకలనుచున్నారు. వాటిని రచించిన గ్రంథకర్తలెవరని వాదించుతున్నారు. అట్టి పవిత్ర భాష దైవ భాష అయిన సంస్కృతమును అభ్యసించవలసిన వారు అది కష్టమని చెడామడా తిట్టి ఇతర దేశులకు అప్పగించుతున్నారే. ఎంత విచిత్రం! పోనిండు, దేశభాషలైనను సక్రమంగా అభ్యసించుతున్నారా? లేదు.
The sacred texts of India, which are discarded by the Indians today, are picked up by the Westerners and diligently studied and researched upon, realizing that it enshrines incomparable sources of illumination and priceless pearls of wisdom. They lift it reverentially above their heads and acclaim it as the precious gift of Bharat to themselves and their children. They carry it across the seas with joy in their eyes and thankfulness in their hearts. Now shall I reveal what the children of India, who are the rightful owners of this, have been doing? They neither look up these pages, nor listen about them, nor even concern themselves about them. One in a million reads them, but even he is ridiculed. These books are laughed at as a conglomeration of lies and legends, and they argue about their authorship and historicity. Instead of learning the sacred language Sanskrit, they dismiss it as very hard to learn and pass on the treasure to scholars of other lands. What a sad spectacle is this! It would have been some compensation if they attended carefully to the study of their mother tongue. But they do not do even this. There is sheer neglect of learning, and as a result, lack of peace everywhere.
So, as I ruminate on what Bhagwan has mentioned here, three central ideas occur to me. One is, Bhagwan is talking about the apathy of the current generation towards the ancient texts and the ancient traditions. Second, Bhagwan is referring to the lack of interest in Sanskrit and mother tongue. And finally, Bhagwan is referring to how this lack of interest has led to peacelessness in the world. So if I go by the first observation, the apathy of the current generation towards ancient texts and traditions, what are your thoughts on this, sir? Because when you, today you see the current generation many times not in favor of conforming to so many of our traditions and so many of our practices which have been gifted to us by our saints and sages. When I think about it, what comes to me is, our saints and sages, through their hours of contemplation and meditation and intuition, communion, whatever we may call it, they discovered certain beautiful facets of how to live in harmony with nature. And they knew these are very complex. These cannot be explained to each and every one unless they have that kind of a wavelength, that kind of and higher consciousness. They probably will not be able to grasp it. So they codified it in the form of, say, these traditions, and that's how they have continued from generation to generation. But with time, I think, with people not being able to grasp that, people not being able to see the profundity of those rituals, and we have a generation which perhaps doesn't value them in the manner they should be. Your thoughts on this, sir?
Well, I am a tough guy, and I believe tough words are needed. First and foremost, we have to recognize that this kind of language makes excuses for us.
Mm-hmm.
So I am not going to spend time criticizing the kind of arguments we give, because it's very easy to give arguments and say this doesn't work in today's world.
Mm.
So I am going to look at it differently. Is there something from the past,
yes,
which stands the test of time?
Mm.
So I can't say this is the cell phone age or whatever it is. and find an alibi. From there we have come to here via a series of inactions. First, there has been neglect.
Mm.
Neglect has been very prominent in the latter part of last century, and of course now it has gone like a rocket. Afterwards you forget about it. When I neglect, I know it is there, but I am not paying attention. Next crime is forgetting. Then you trash it. That's all junk.
Mm.
It's a junk science when you wanted to trash climate change.
Mm.
I mean, the promoters of climate change. And now, those who talk about the forgotten legacy, they're ridiculed. Look at that fellow. He's wasting his time and so on and so forth.
Mm.
So we have gone from neglect to forgetting, then trashing, and now ridiculing.
Mm.
So I want to say, okay, let me go and find out if there is anything. In my view, there are something absolutely stunning. If I squeeze the whole of the past, which you talk about in all those books, I get certain standout points, bullet points. First is, they give a formula or recipe for maintaining moral equilibrium in society. Now, if you ask me, that moral equilibrium in society is needed for the past, present and the future. There is no time when we cannot have that. Missing. That's the first thing. Moral equilibrium is all nice. It's a phrase. There must be some tool to ensure that moral equilibrium. And the preeminent tool that has been prescribed is duty. Duty is the vehicle that is used for maintaining this thing. But, all right, we will go into what is duty. But duty is a word that describes action. Is there any other requirement? That is not stated. But it was Swami who drove our attention to it in a way that no one else has. And that is because prema was his form. Although you say love is his form, that love is not adequate. Prema was his form. Our, if you go to the kirtanas of kritis of Tyagaraja, he always uses the word prema for this thing.
Mm.
And hardly anybody has paid attention. The word you use in relation to God is prema. Rama ni prema.
Hmm.
We never use that word. And the first time we started hearing it on an extensive scale was Swami. So these three things have to exist as long as human beings exist. That is my first point. Next thing is, let us look at duty. There have been a lot of things that have been said by Westerners on duty. It's not that they did not recognize the importance of duty. I'll skip that. Now, one of the things that is implied by others but explicitly stated by our forefathers is, there is no one exempted from duty. Not one person can get an exemption from duty. I can get a doctor's certificate and escape an examination. Alright? Nobody gets that. Duty is human beings' obligation. Okay. This obligation cannot change with time. You can't say this is, what is it called, internet age, this age, globalization and all that. Nothing. If this duty is not discharged in the way our ancestors said, then whatever you do, you may have GDP of $200 trillion. The country with the maximum GDP is America, $20 trillion. Make it $200 trillion. Still there will be no peace or this moral equilibrium. So this duty must have the fragrance of prema. But there, before I come to the prema, I will say, I'll say a few words about what our ancestors did in the old days. How did they codify duty and how did they discharge their duties? This they did in terms of specific targets. Duty to the rishis. duties to my ancestors, specific ancestors, duties to the gods, because they believed in devas, and duty to what they call the guest, and lastly duty to nature. The word used was Rishi Yajna, that is a duty to the legacy of knowledge in today's world.
Yes.
Pitru Yajna, gift of birth. I am there because of my parents. My parents are there because of their parents. So there is a lineage, and I pay my homage to that particular lineage. Then devas. You can generally say bounties of nature. Just to give a practical example, one of the devas worshipped was Surya or Sun.
Yes.
Now you say that's a lot of baloney. Fine, that's a lot of baloney. But the fact of the matter is, the sun's presence alone is unable to sustain life on earth. So at least you recognize I am alive here because of the sun. The ancients saw God through sun and gave ultimately all destination, even yes. though the local address is it goes yeah. there. That is why Swami said, Sarva Jiva Namaskaram Kesavam Pratigacchati. Guest, somebody comes, you say you welcome him like God. In fact, even guest does not mean somebody whom you call for convocation or something like that. Anybody who comes,
yes.
please come in. What can I do for you and all that? So all that must be done with some what you call respect, reverence in this. And Bhuta Yajna in today's world boils down to what you call the being the custodian of ecosystem, planetary ecosystem. It has been gifted. Now you have to be the custodian and take care of it. In the old days, we called it by prakriti and adoration and mother nature and all that. So, duty is actions. Actions performed by humans alone are described in terms of duty. You don't talk of the duty of a tiger or a frog or anything. So, this duty is springing out of actions which are coming out of an entity called the mind. Action is triggered by thoughts. So, the mind is triggered by good thoughts, good action, and that good action will lead to dharma. If the mind is contaminated, infected with bad thoughts, bad action, adharma. Ultimately, in whatever yuga you live, in whatever place you live, whether you live in a tribal society, in today's world, if you go to Kar Nicobar Islands, there are some tribals. They still use bows and arrows, but you may not believe it. Or you go to New York City, one of the richest places on earth, or for that matter, London. Dharma and adharma exist. The concept exists. This is right, that is wrong. This is morally right, this is morally wrong. It is still there. As long as those things are there, the teachings of the ancients alone put it in a proper context. This takes some time to understand. And once again I repeat, if that duty does not have the fragrance of prema, which is love for God, that I'll take up a little later, then that is just robotic action. That's, even in the ancient society, they made clear what are the essential aspects of duty. It must have three components. The karma yoga aspect, the so-called jnana yoga aspect, and the bhakti yoga. I can bring it down to today's world and say what is the meaning of karma yoga, what is the meaning of jnana yoga, and what is the meaning of bhakti or prema yoga. How these are needed. This is needed everywhere. I am really concerned with the archive. I need it from every person there, every single day, 24/7. So it is a relevant entity. If that is abandoned, then we are going to be in deep trouble. Because once you abandon them, you are abandoning right and wrong. Once you abandon right and wrong,
yes.
then society is in deep trouble. And in this the nuclear age, that trouble can be horrible. Okay, I stop. I've taken a lot of time. And you probably have just... It's going to be... Okay, we have another half.
Yeah, we have enough time.
No, this observation is very, very interesting, sir. You mentioned that duty does not change across the centuries. I never thought of it in that light. No.
Concept of duty.
Correct.
The exact duties may change.
Yes. But the basic principle of what each one is expected to do in terms of his or her family and society and nature.
I'll give you a very trivial example. Whatever it is, as Swami once said, when a cow gives birth to a calf, it will stand up and take milk by the mother cow licks. When a human baby is born, unless the mother picks up the baby and feeds it, it will not get milk. Period. As long as humans are like this and not like robots with cell phones, this has to be done. This cannot change. It was so with the caveman, Mr. Flintstone. It will be today with whoever it is, Bill Gates or whatever it is. And it will be so 100 years, 200 years, 1,000 years if humans live till then. That is not, and that duty is there. It is programmed into you. So there are other duties which you have to do consciously. It's not programmed. For example, throwing garbage into the road. That is a duty. Why? What's there in it for me? That those are the things where you have to use your brain's head and so on and so forth.
So when we talk about neglect of duty, is it that today's generation is, because of distraction, they are not able to do it, or is it because of not giving it its due importance? Like, you see, where does it come from?
That is an interesting question. And also an important question to which we do not give attention. Duty takes time.
Okay.
Okay. Even if I am thinking or praying to God, it takes time. Time is the stuff life is made of. So, some part of my existence is used up for duty. Supposing that time I devote not to duty, but to distraction. Then, that is delusional. I am not... Neglect can come purely because of that. No, I am very busy with this, I cannot do this. Slowly it starts like that. For example, a student is supposed to come to the class on time. I am late. This matter. 2 days, 3 days.
Bangalore roads and traffic.
Once you have decided to sort of bluff your way out, you can find. I have seen myself, whenever I give appointment to people, they always used to come late. When I tell them, no, this, that. I asked them, if you go to the railway station, do you go after the train goes? There was a man I knew in Kalpakkam. His name was, Hari Prasad Rao. He will always go to the airport after the plane leaves. And once I was supposed to travel with him in the car early morning, 4:30. I told the transport department, I don't want to go in his car. I want my car separately. And all the drivers knew, if I say a time, I'll be ready at that time. Because of many factors. So, there is a way of finding an excuse for neglect. That is, in other words, I want to come back to the question. You have to establish priorities.
Correct.
Moment you have priority. For example, I asked a fellow, when Swami was there, did you go late for darshan? No, sir. Why? No, that's Swami, sir. So, straight away, I draw the chart. You are somewhere there, he is there. So I make concessions, then excuses, then neglect. Then I say, why should I make duty? Nobody in America does India, then why should I do it? Fine, don't do it.
Sir, one more angle to it, which just comes to mind. Is it because there is no immediate consequence of neglect of duty? Because oftentimes what happens is we are like pushing it under the rug. And we neglect duty. Swami has told several times that the, you know, tsunamis and other natural disasters are also because of man's neglect towards nature. But we are taking it for granted till it actually piles up.
No. Duty has nothing to do with punishment. That's another aspect. The consequence and all that. I have a lot of people come and tell me regularly, sir, you are always busy and all that. I said, I don't waste time, it's not in my nature. If I have 1 minute, I use it. That's the way I manage to do so much in 24 hours. So how can I come and say, have you ever tried? On the other hand, if you want an American visa, you will stand on your head for and do tapas because of it till you get visa.
Yes.
That is high in your priority.
Yes.
This is a lazy, lame excuse.
Mm.
I bluntly tell that. And when I was serving as a part of Radio Sai, somebody will come and say, somebody is there to see you. They want to see you. So you say, find out when they are leaving.
Correct.
If they say, I am leaving 4 days from now, I'll call them and say, you meet me on that day. If they say, I am leaving this evening, I'll say, sit down. And talk to them. They have come from somewhere, they have come to Swami's house, say a few nice things and send them off. If they are staying, I say, I'll choose a time that is convenient because I'm involved in something.
Correct.
So, it's a question of priorities.
Hmm.
If my priorities are high in some things, this is so. No, I mean, this is a fact of life. This is what you call swartham built as a part of living in nature. That is not to be scoffed at. Oh, what a fellow. We are all having that, but how to get rid of it?
Okay.
That is the whole point.
Mm.
That's the whole point. And at the end of the day, the duty is the pathway for liberation also. That is the most important thing. And that has to be the same all the time.
Yes. In fact, two thoughts come to mind.
Are you able to get the hang of what I'm saying?
Oh, yes, yes, sir. Definitely. I mean, so much to now sort
of... He's got to suffer from indigestion. You won't suffer from indigestion.
No, definitely there is...
No, so there's a lot to think.
Lot to think, definitely, yes. But one thing...
See, I must give you your money's worth, so to say.
Talking about the current generation not taking to... these practices and study of our scriptures seriously. I remember talking to Mr. Swaminathan Gurumurthy, who was here for a talk on Aradhana Day a few years ago. And when I told him that, you know, this current generation today somehow they don't take so easily to all these beautiful practices passed on to us by our sages and saints, he said, we cannot blame the current generation. They are not to be blamed. Who is to be blamed? Is the parents of the current generation. He says that because when they ask questions, if you are not able to give a convincing answer, that is when they lose interest.
No, I won't quite agree with that. There are two things. And one of the sort of mistakes we always make is we stress the procedures.
Mm.
No, you can't stress the procedures. And the procedures are irrelevant.
Hmm.
Procedures are shaped by time.
Hmm.
Okay. And circumstances. In India, according to tradition, the people never wore shirts and all that. They only wore an upper cloth.
Hmm.
Male vastram, as you used to say. You go and live in North India, in male vastram, you will be dead. You will die of hypothermia. So, there are what you call all sorts of, we emphasize the trivial aspects.
Mm.
The most important thing, for example, what is that big take-home lesson from Mahabharata? You can't cheat your way to wealth.
Mm.
That is what is it, long and short. That is true then, that is true now.
Now.
If you go and look at capitalism, it is nothing but cheating your way to wealth. And Pope Francis bluntly called it dung of the devil. Okay. Very rightly so.
Mm.
So, what is the principle? Don't hurt.
Yes.
Don't be selfish.
The spirit.
Don't take what belongs to others.
Correct.
And here is where our ancestors had deep, greater insight than others.
Mm.
In no other philosophy did they say, don't take what belongs to those who come after you.
Mm.
Just as you respect your pitrus, the generations that come behind, you should not take anything away from others. You show me one philosophy which talks about that. What is the meaning of this? Swami has explained in various occasions. That was not created by you or your grandfather. The land you walk on was created by God. The water you drink was created by God. The air you breathe was created by God. What right do you have to pollute the oceans and the rivers, denying future generations from access to them? What right do you have to pollute the air so much? What right do you have to mistreat Prakriti, creating a climate change which is made by you and which you deny? We have a responsibility to the future also. I have not seen that stated. It is not explicitly stated, but you have to do some homework and read. That is what we have to tell the other rest of the world. Not go and say Sanskrit, you won't find takers for that. So there is a point about taking the essence and conveying it in suitable words. Otherwise we will be lost in trivialities and fellow will rightly say go to hell.
Yes.
And even for that Swami has given us this thing, very interesting this thing, procedure. He says you are traveling in a bus. Normally you sing bhajans at 6 o'clock. You close your eyes, imagine you are in Prashanti, mumble the bhajans. He gave all the excuses you want, concessions rather.
Yes.
So that is what you call innovation. No, I don't see any other fellow devotees talk about such innovations. Adaptation.
Yes.
See.
In fact, when I remember when I was talking to one student who came to Bhagwan way back in the 80s, and I asked him, what fascinated you about Swami? He said, one thing which really captured me was how Bhagwan used to explain the inner significance of everything that we were doing. You know, he was not fascinated by the miracles or the materializations or anything.
That fellow was a sensible guy. Like me. Go ahead.
So he said, that is, as a youngster, that is what captivated me, because everything, he was giving a depth to everything that we were seeing around us.
You know, you said youngster. You know why he was asking those questions?
Why he was asking? Why that youngster was asking these questions? But I think by the time people are that age, they do ask all these questions.
No.
I'll tell you an astounding experience I had when I went to America and Canada in 2013. One of the places I visited was Canada. I wanted to go to Canada because my first overseas trip was to Canada. And the first place I landed there in Canada, from US, I went from US, was Toronto. It's a very big city in southern Ontario, one of the biggest cities in Canada. Toronto.
Yes.
They have two major science centers. One is called the York Center, other is called the Scarborough Center. Scarborough Center is largely the initiative of Sri Lankan Tamilians. I was giving a talk there. And I just stopped and asked any questions. That's what I normally do. Right in front of me on the ground, there was a Chinese boy. He was studying in the Sai school. Somehow he came there. He was sitting on the ground. So he asked me, how do you get out of the wheel of karma? I mean, I have talked all over the world, from the southern hemisphere to the northern hemisphere. This 7-year-old Chinese boy asked me, how do you get out of the wheel of karma? Buddhist boy. I didn't know what to say. Suddenly I said, by God's grace, the way you get out of the wheel of karma is to use the wheel of dharma.
Oh, wow.
So that was a headline. Then I called that boy and made him sit next to me, and I was talking to him. And he said, I want to know the inner meaning of Swami's teachings. I have never heard a single person talk to me. That is his Purva Janma Punya. You see, you mature through it.
Yes,
so
absolutely.
If a fellow is young, we don't know how much he has accumulated in the past. So age has nothing. He said, you are able to talk like that. We have already come to this point. Physically, you are younger than me. So I'm just telling you, let us not calibrate them by the body.
Yes. Yeah,
no, who knows how many janmas?
Definitely.
No, sorry, I interrupted the thread.
No, I think that was really beautiful. But the point, as you very rightly made, is if we can convey the spirit of everything, I think that is the crux of the discussion, I mean, what you emphasized. And in some ways that is what has appealed to so many youngsters to whatever Bhagwan has said. And what I have seen also is when you come through science, then it sometimes becomes appealing to the current generation. For example, if you tell them about Tulasi and all that, you know, you have to worship the Tulasi, they'll think, what is the point of worshipping Tulasi? Why we should do it? It's after all...
You know, frankly, I am not prepared to accept all that.
Mm.
The science through Tulasi and conveying through proper wisdom.
Mm.
The answer was given by Swami.
Mm.
And that is true in all situations, quite apart from what so-called spirituality is.
Mm.
He said, my life is my message. If you live in a certain way, you get credibility. If I talk in a certain way, this guy is well-read, he will collect his fees.
Mm. Mm.
That was Gandhi.
Yes.
He was so scrupulously truthful, you had to bow to it. And any fellow who works hard, that is a message. People congregate to him because they can learn from him. Basically, that was the guru. The guru must be an exemplar. Otherwise, I can go to some talking schools and pay some money and... Your media.
Acharya. Swami said acharanam. But put in acharanam.
That's all right.
Yes.
So, that is, it doesn't lead to anything. On the other hand, if you go and physically work there, and that was one of the things that Swami did with respect to Karma Yoga. He always went around looking at details. And I told some of these things to somebody, they were stunned. And talking of duty and God, I cannot help mentioning what Krishna says to Arjuna in the Bhagavad Gita. He said, oh, Partha, I have created all the three worlds. I am the boss of the worlds. I have no duty.
Yes.
But having taken a human form, and my form is compelled to act.
Yes.
And I act in such a way as if this body is doing the duty. And that is your example, worked example. Do you think I have any duty to drive your chariot taxi here? Okay? Do you think I'm interested in a real estate fight between you and your followers? I'm interested in supporting you because you have to fight for dharma against dharma.
Yes.
So even there he gives a context. So we can't go around preaching. Nobody is going to... they will actually trash you for preaching. Mm. But if you become an exemplar and then talk, this is what I'm trying to do. That makes a difference. See, when you do something, even an experiment, this is the way you do, they learn.
Mm.
So, teach by following and becoming an exemplar. And nobody has time for that, because what's there in it for me?
Mm.
Instead, what does a teacher do in a class? He will say, come to my house, I'll give you tuition. All sorts of things goes on. In medicine, you come to my house, clinic, and so on. So, action is the best advertisement. Sorry, I interrupted the thread.
No.
So, we can't go around saying our country was great in this sense.
Yes.
You be great now.
Yes.
I'm not interested in what you are. Who was there? Who saw it?
Yes.
You be great now, then I'll follow.
Yes.
That is why in my last session, I referred to India being the moral leader of the world.
Yes, absolutely.
That is its natural duty.
Mm.
The country has a duty.
Yes.
In fact, several times when students are with Swami and they tell Swami, we offer our gratitude, thank you Swami. I said, why are you thanking me? It is my duty, sir. Swami used to say that in a very, very...
I heard him many times.
Yes.
So for a while I said, what's going on? Then I said, you think you better do your duty.
Mm-hmm. In fact, I remember on those lines, one day when Bhagwan... came outside to sit for a program after he had taken Arati.
Hmm.
The boys had prepared a program and it was actually a long session. Swami had already spent a lot of time in the interview room and nobody was actually expecting Bhagwan to come. But the boys are perhaps praying hard. Swami came and Swami sat for another 45 minutes watching the program of the boys. And after that, when the warden went and told Swami, you took so much Shrama for all of us, Swami said, idi shrama kadu, idi prema. So earlier, sir...
Yeah, that is a message in that.
Yes.
The message is, my action, my duty has got the fragrance of prema.
Yes.
What you say, I am doing your duty for you, does it have the fragrance of prema?
Yes.
Not even scent bought in market. Old spice or whatever it is.
Yes.
Wo bhi nahi hai.
Yes. In fact, that's what you mentioned about prema. I wanted to come to that. You mentioned also about this duty having these three aspects to it. The karma, bhakti and jnana. How everything that we do, every duty can have all these three aspects embedded. Mm-hmm. And with the substratum of prema, if you can elaborate on that, sir.
Okay. That is a very good question. We may have to spill over to the next thing. Duty is, well, let us say I am having, now the archive is coming, we are appointing an electrician.
Mm-hmm.
I have to tell him, these are your duties. You have to do this, you have to do this, do this. Then, that is karma yoga. How you do it properly, how you do's and don'ts. That is essentially karma yoga. Do your duty thoroughly, neatly, etc., etc. Jnana yoga. Jnana yoga doesn't have to mean what is said in the Bhagavad Gita. Why are you doing this?
Mm-hmm.
How to do, why you are doing. This is the reason, if this is not done, that damage, equipment will be damaged so and so. Then how do you do it? That is bhakti yoga.
Hmm.
How do I do it? I can say it in many ways. If you do it, you must at the end of the day feel that you have done something, especially when you are doing a construction work, a fabrication work, assembly work and commission. Achha, now it is working, I am so happy.
Hmm.
I struggled all the time. Who is enjoying that? There is someone inside. That is what Ramana will ask, ask him.
Hmm.
But at that time you don't confuse him. But if you train him like that, half the job is done. He is ready for going from to higher, say, primary school to secondary school, and you can take him further. If that is there, then lot of things will happen. For example, one extreme case I'll give you. The Baba Atomic Research Center decided to set up a cyclotron laboratory in Calcutta. That was way back. They called it Variable Energy Cyclotron Center. And it is in Calcutta, which is in Bengal. And Bengal was known for its Marxism and all that. This was in a place called Salt Lake. That time it was very backward, very close to the airport. Absolutely backward. There was really salt water in the ground and all that. Now that has become a very prime estate with football stadium and all that. Those days there was nothing. And the government pays salary through the banks. There was no bank nearby. Some bank was at least 3 kilometers away. And that bank was a local bank and was giving a lot of problem. So the government was pressurized. That is the government of India pressurized. The atomic energy belongs to the government of India. So they asked the state bank to set up a branch right next to the Variable Energy Cyclotron Center.
Mm-hmm.
But who are the people working there? All Marxists. So they will come at 10 o'clock. They will clean the table and all that. And then all the fellows will be standing. Counter is supposed to open at 10 o'clock. Then that fellow will slowly open his newspaper and start reading. Can you imagine that? This fellow will be shouting, 10 o'clock, we are waiting for you. You are being salary. Paid salary, you should do your duty. That fellow will say, I am being paid salary to come to work.
Oh my God.
He says, I should work. I'm talking of duty. If you want me to work, you must pay overtime. You are paying overtime. You must pay overtime for working in normal time. So, you know, how the adharma can twist the meaning of duty. This is a real thing that happened. So, when I train my people in this line, they become very conscientious. And I am proud to say Dr. Sani, whom you have met, was trained by me. And even today, he will talk about national interest, what do we do for this country, and so on and so forth. At the end of the day, in his own way, Dr. Neelakantan is like that. Why are we wasting public money? We should not be wasted and so on. Spending money. All those things we must be careful. Unnecessarily we spend money. So, if Everybody works like that, society will be Ramarajya. You know, if all the banks work, all the trains run on time, all the utilities run on time, all the hospitals work properly, that is half of Ramarajya. There is no magic, nothing. People, when teachers are paid and they don't want to teach and or even learn, and everybody wants to be distracted from what they are supposed to be doing. Students are supposed to sit in class. They go on check. This did not happen 5 years ago. Now I believe they use their smartphones and all that and do checking of Facebook or whatever. And if the vice chancellor says you should not bring cell phone to the class, all the parents cry. Who can? We must know what our daughter is, where our daughter is. Damn it, when I was a student in 1950s, if I had to contact my father, no phone, nothing. I had to write a postcard. It will take him 5 days to reach. If he answered immediately, it will come to me after 5 days. 10 days passed. I am not the worst for it. I am not the worst for it. So, we have created artificial distractions and diversions. Yes. That is the beauty of the mind. As a saying in one of the classroom goes, the mind is infinitely capable of deluding itself. Yes. So, all the problems are given by the greater opportunities offered by modern society to the mind. In the old days, the mind was kept engaged with all sorts of chanting, daily rituals, and festivals, any number of festivals. You do Ganesha and all that. That's all just a way of distracting and telling you something according to the nature of the festival. Shivaratri, you do this. Ganesha Puja, you do this. Krishnashtami, you do this. That's a way of keeping the mind busy, focused on one central target. Now we don't have that because our mind has been sold and taken away.
Absolutely.
It has all piped out through that thing and it goes to Facebook or what else, I don't know.
Absolutely.
Yes, everybody is checking his mail every 5 minutes. And I don't know why I have to go on telling I've eaten this, that and all that. I never use these things. When I found these people are doing all these things, I asked, why do you have to go on telling me I forgot to brush my teeth, but I ate breakfast without brushing my teeth? How does it shake the world? So, we have done the trivialization. I talked about trivialization.
Yes.
We have ourselves trivialized our values. And we can't go around using the methodology of the past.
Correct.
Yes.
So, and it has a lot of meaning in today's world. If a pilot is flying an Airbus 380, there are 500 passengers there, two decks, 500 people under his control in a machine which can go bad in many ways. I saw a video the other day taken somewhere, very strong winds. This plane is being simply tossed. Fellows having struggled to control that. Suddenly there was a storm there. This is landing. The plane is being pushed this way, that way. Unbelievable. And that plane has a lot of power, but wind is stronger. As Swami said, you have a fan. Can any fan produce the power of a hurricane? You open your tap, you get rain. Okay. But what about the rain that comes?
Yes.
In the recent the hurricane that hit Texas, the amount of water that came down.
Yes.
It's a trillion, what you call, gallons of water. Trillion tons of water, not gallons. Tons, trillion tons. 10 to the power of 12 tons picked up from the Atlantic Ocean and Gulf of Mexico. You take that and drop that. Can we do anything like that? That is why Gandhi said, there is an indefinable, mysterious power that pervades everything. I feel it, though I cannot see it. And he also said, that is because it is beyond the senses.
Yes.
That is the message that our country here. Beyond the senses, there exists something beyond the senses. Do we tell anybody who has the sense to listen to that?
Wow. There is so much definitely to ruminate.
See, I don't have listeners. I can't go and talk to my computer, telephone, or anything. So when I get bakra, I catch them.
No, I think.
But now your time is coming to your rescue.
Yeah. It's definitely something so much to contemplate.
Too much already.
So, yes, sir. Thank you so much for coming today. I know it's always, every day is a busy day for you, but somehow you earmark this time for Radio Sai. So
this is not something I like it. It's my
wonderful
duty also. If I help somebody somewhere in some way, then it is something.
Yes. Wonderful. So, dear listeners,
this is the duty of older generation to younger generation. I also have a duty.
Thank you so much, sir.
You never retire from duty. You can retire from job, but you can't.
No, it's really very, very valuable for us because whatever we can listen from you is something which will help the coming generations to align ourselves to what Bhagwan has said, to understand it in the right context and make it relevant for our time. So, dear listeners, please do tell us what you felt about this program. If you have any questions that you want to put to sir, please feel free to write to us. As always, you can write to listener@radiosai.org. As I mentioned before, we are doing the 13th chapter of Premavaini. So if you have some time, do open the pages of Premavaini, and as you go through it, I'm sure you will have many new insights, new thoughts, new dilemmas about how to make this work in real life. So please feel free to send us your thoughts and your questions, with prayers to Bhagwan for giving us this beautiful opportunity to ruminate on these precious pearls of wisdom that he has so painstakingly written so many years ago, and praying that we continue this satsang in the weeks to come. I take leave of all of you. Thank you so much. Sai Ram.